The End Podcast is brought to you by Emma, email marketing that works for you.
In a world where QR codes kill kittens and customer service is an oxymoron, one podcast has set out to make things right. This is The Unpodcast with your hosts, Scott Stratton and Allison Kramer.
2019. The year of... I don't know.
I'm just going to leave you hanging out to dry.
Why would you do that?
Because I didn't know what you were going
to
do.
I was segueing into whatever you were thinking. Welcome to 2019, folks. Whenever you're listening to this in this fine, fine new year, which you realize is no different than 2018, unless you make it so. I'm motivational speaker Scott Stratton. Along with me is motivational speaker Allison.
Am I?
That's a stretch.
Am I really?
Well, welcome anyways. We hope it's treating you well. We hope you made resolutions that actually make sense, that you can control, and you enjoy. On the show today, we have a whole smorgasbord of fun stuff. A couple thoughts about millennials, yet again, with a couple millennials in the room, on both ends of the spectrum of millennial, by the way. We got Wayne the Rapper behind the board, who is on the older skew of millennials. And Aiden D-Rock is here as well, who's on the younger skew of millennials. So we're going to get the peanut gallery opinion on a couple of these articles. But first, I want to talk about an app. And the reason why I want to talk about it is because I got to use it today. And there's an app called Be My Eyes. And it's a... I'm going to read you out from their about pages for a second. It says, Be My Eyes is a free mobile app with one main goal, to make the world more accessible for blind and low vision people. The app connects blind and low vision individuals with sighted volunteers and companies from all over the world through a live video call. So what happens here in the app, there's about almost 2 million volunteers signed up for the app, including myself. And there's just over 100,000 blind or very low vision impaired individuals on it as well. And what happens with the app is somebody who is visually impaired will use the app, and you'll click on help the call. And what happens is you get to be the eyes of the person. So they're usually looking at labels on cans. They're looking at expiry dates and something in their cupboard, or different like soups in the label. Like the Campbell's soup label looks the same, you know, just even with in a blur. And so it helps you determine stuff. So I saw it. I'm like, this is so cool of how you can help each other. And this is the internet to me. This is technology to me. This is disruption to me. And so I signed up a few weeks ago, but there's more than 10 times the amount of volunteers on there as there is people who are using the service. And so what happens is it'll ring your phone, and it rings multiple volunteers' phone, and whoever picks it up first does the call. So this morning, right before coming on here, I got my first call. And I had the phone in my hand, so it was immediately right there. So a ring happened, and I clicked it, and up popped a live video. So I'm not on the video. It's the person who's making the call. It's just their phone pointing at something. And it opened up, and the guy's like, hey. And I'm like, how you doing? He goes, good. I have three bouquets of flowers here that he's bought. And he doesn't know. Two of them are multicolored flowers, and one is just like a set of pink flowers. And he's like, which one of these are the multicolored ones? And which one's the straight color one? And so he just used his hand, his finger, and he pointed. And I said, that one's multicolored, that one's not. He's like, great. And he's like, and what is this tag on here? Is it a price tag? Because he doesn't want to give the flowers to somebody with the price tag on it. But if it was just a regular barcode, and it showed the price. And he's like, yeah, I said, that's the price for there. And he's like, I can't pull it off. I'll have to cut it off. And I'm like, yeah, those things are always stuck on there. And he's like, great. That's all I needed. Merry Christmas.
What was the process for becoming a volunteer? Like, what did you have to do?
Nothing. You just signed up saying you're willing to do it, which opens it up. Right? It opens up a bit to being used by nefarious people to do, you know, not to be cool or something about it. But there was no, it was a, you sign up and then you click, as soon as you click it, you click here to do a test call, and it's just recorded. There's nobody on the other end, and you click it and it'll ring it, and it'll show you what it's like. So it'll ring it if you're in the app, and it'll also show you, it'll ring it if your phone is asleep, what the protocol is. So that's it. It was just a random, I don't know on the other end.
Did it come up like on your phone when it rang? Did it come up with the name of the app on it?
Yes. And it was a special ring for the app. Like, I hadn't heard it before.
Yeah. So that's cool.
Yeah, my phone went off, and I was on my phone, which I'm known to be doing. So it was right there. I immediately clicked it. And then I realized, uh-oh, you know what? you know, what happens next, because I'd never been on the call, right?
You're or just, like if it's like somebody needs directions or something,
right.
Or like it's something like that you don't know about,
right?
It's so broad,
right? But they also know when they sign up for it, you can get anybody, you know, anywhere in the world,
yeah,
right, to get it. So it's not going to be as so specific. But I don't know how they do the other end of it. I don't know how to qualify
languages. What about languages and stuff like
same
that?
Same thing.
Yeah, well, interesting. You know,
when
to see
you do
how
sign
grows.
Up, you do pick. Right now, it's English.
You pick,
so, yeah. You'd pick the language. So I just thought it was such a cool thing, and I finally got to do it.
Yeah,
you know,
cool.
but then also it makes you realize, you know, the day-to-day things that you don't have to think about if you have, you know, your full vision. And it goes along with what we talked about one of the previous recent episodes about the two blind brothers and their website, and then clicking one button that makes you shows you what it's like to have that degenerative vision. Fascinating stuff. Great empathy tool, great tool overall, and I'm really happy to that we actually got to use it. So that was really cool. But on with the show. Now for some resentment. Back to our regularly
scheduled. Are we jumping right into resentment?
Back to our regularly scheduled resentment brought to you by Emma. That's a bad segue. That's
it
a
was
bad,
really bad, but
bad segue to Emma, where you're gonna, you know, doing email marketing, right? And I didn't even pick the right tagline.
And I thought you could maybe like use the New Year's greeting to thank Emma. Like somehow make it a positive thing.
Yeah, that's very true.
Make better email marketing your New Year's resolution with Emma.
Why don't we go with that?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll fix it in post.
Let's
we'll fix
go
it
with
in
that.
Post, right? Wayne's got it. Wayne the rapper will take care of that. No problem.
So if you're feeling, did you say resentful? Because I have something that's going to make you feel like maybe a little more resentful.
Hence my segue, yes.
This story is from businessinsider.com. And a seven-year-old boy is making $22 million a year on YouTube reviewing toys. The highest earning YouTube star in the world is an elementary school kid who makes millions reviewing toys. Ryan, the seven-year-old host of Ryan Toys Review, a popular toy channel on YouTube, jumped from number 8 to number 1 on Forbes' annual list of YouTube stars who are making the most money. It's a family-run YouTube channel. Ryan reviews toys, and the $22 million is pre-tax, so maybe that'll make moderately better.
Forget it.
And it says that he was featured on The Verge in 2016, and actually they opened the account when he was 4.
And for those that don't understand what these channels are like, it's literally this kid opening up toys and playing with them.
Isn't that crazy?
That's a full stop, by the way. After that sentence, that's full stop.
His channel has 17 million followers and has a combined, all his videos, 26 billion views. Mm-hmm. Isn't that incredible?
So how many followers does this channel have?
17 million.
So between us and him, we have a combined total of 17,005,000 subscribers. Combined.
That's pretty
and
good.
And we make a combined.
No, we don't need to do the
manual. We make
manual.
A combined
That's
total
good.
Of $22 million That's combined between our channels. I was just happy to go over 5,000 because that allowed us to get into some YouTube creator stuff because we're over that 5,000 threshold. And wow.
I think it's pretty incredible.
And I think, and here's the thing though, right? I joke about resentment, but you can't call it ridiculous. The market dictates who is successful.
But wait, listen to this. Earlier this year, so obviously the family has had tons of success with this. Earlier this year, Ryan struck a deal with Walmart to sell a toy line called Ryan's World exclusively in over 2,500 U.S. stores and on the Walmart's website. It says that Ryan's World is the first merchandise to be sold after Pocket Watch, a children's media brand, negotiated licensing deals a few years ago. So he's the second YouTube brand to spread off into his own line.
It's brilliant of
products.
Walmart too, right? But here's the thing, right? So you like the famous the chef in the States with Target, Rachel Ray, did that type of stuff, or the clothing lines that come out. Let's say because Target has done a bunch of exclusive type of things like that. That's simply because Rachel Ray is a great personality and has a popular TV show. Well, this kid's got a great personality and a popular
show. It's so funny. Like, first of all, she's an adult. And second of all, you know, she has a skill.
Yeah.
Like, she's a chef and a host. And then he's a kid opening toys.
But But having a endorsed line of products or a exclusive line of products has nothing to do with skill. It all has to do with popularity. That's it. And I know she's a great cook. She's certainly a seasoned cook, and no pun intended, because seasoning you cook with. If I have to explain the jokes, people, it's too late. But it's all about sponsors or influencers, which is the new term for sponsor. You know, it's you have an audience that brand wants to reach. And end of statement. That's it. It has nothing to do with skill and all to do with platform. Right. That's why somebody that could be the smartest astrophysicist in the world may not get the same endorsement deals because of the size of the market. It has nothing to do with skill. It has to do with, and this is really unboxing, right? This kid is, it's under the unboxing genre. Yes? No?
We think so. For
it's
sure.
Under the quote unquote unboxing world, which adults do as well. The new iPhone unboxing, the new this unboxing. And then you had a Will It Blend was the first type of thing where it was like using products. And then there was like the one channel, all they do is drop their new iPhone. That's their entire channel. Is like the when the day comes out, they always get it and they drop it, see if it'll break. That's their channel. That's their thing. And the nice thing about a democracy-based driven popularity, in theory, and we can argue all day that it's not democratic and views are skewed, but it's more pure than the olden days, at least, where look the population decides what's popular. I don't understand people doing, you know, watching what's the term for watching somebody play a video game? There's a term for it. I can't remember what it is.
Like the YouTube videos where you watch someone play
Twitch,
a video game.
Twitch is an example of it. Watching people do a Twitch stream. I think it's watch me play. Like there's an actual term for it, but it's okay. A term of watching somebody else play a video game, not a tutorial, not a here's how you beat this guy, but just watching somebody else play, like watching somebody play Fortnite or watching somebody play League of Legends or watching somebody play Spyro. Like that, there are huge channels and huge viewership that have reach. That's important. And I don't understand watching that. But last week, I spent a good hour I can't believe I'm saying this. I watched somebody play slot machines. And it was enthralling. I loved it because they hit this bonus that I've always wanted to hit on a slot machine. How ridiculous is that? So it's about context.
Just terrible.
We can't rip on somebody who opens toys as a thing. By the way, how great is his world? And I hope he gets a cut of that money eventually. But we can't mock that, right? As somebody who has watched every fail video in the history of YouTube, you know, it doesn't matter whether or not we like it or something. For me, it's like, okay, why? That's what I want to know. Why is this the number one earning channel on YouTube? Is it because parents have finally found something that their kids would want to watch and stay affixed to for any given 2.5 to 7 minutes? You know, why is that the number one channel? And that's where the fascinating discussion for me is. So congrats to this guy. Maybe he can play with one of our books one day, you know, and then the world will buy it. I don't think so.
Maybe he can save tuna fish.
Our 7-year-old. I don't think anybody can save tuna fish now because the millennials have screwed it up. Speaking of killing tuna fish, thanks to Emma for... No? Okay. My timing's off for the sponsorship mentions for the live reads, so we'll go from there. This is from foodandwine.com, obviously something I subscribe to. Nope. Tuna fish is struggling because millennials don't even own can openers. And then the subtitle after that, and plenty of other reasons, has nothing to do with can openers. Where do you keep your can opener? If you can answer that question, nice going, Pops. Clearly, you're not hip to the millennial trend of not even bothering to own one. Or at least that's Tuna Giant Starkist's take. In a recent Wall Street Journal article, Starkist VP of Marketing and Innovation, Andy Mex, specifically cited young people's supposed distaste for the device as one of the many reasons the tuna market is struggling. Quote, a lot of millennials don't even own can openers, he told the paper. Sadly, Mex didn't offer up any can opener ownership stats to back up his theory. But thankfully, the Wall Street Journal was there to provide at least some hard data. According to the research from firm Mintel, only 32% of adult consumers under the age of 35 recently bought canned seafood compared to 45% of shoppers 55 and older. It's part of a major downward trend for canned tuna, which has seen its sales wane by 42% over the past three decades after a peak in the 80s. Meanwhile, the sale of fresh and frozen fish has grown over the same period, highlighting shifting consumer preferences. The Wall Street Journal points out that the can is only one of tuna's many optics problems. It also conjures up negative associations like mercury poisoning and harm to dolphins, even if those things aren't issues anymore, not to mention its fishy smell and cat food-like appearance. Oh, and then there was this whole price-fixing thing that was happening, which isn't helping brand loyalty. To end, it says, as a result, the old guard is trying to spice up the tuna world by offering new pouches, or literally with flavors like sriracha and hot buffalo. Meanwhile, some newer brands are finding success simply by putting a fresh face on a boring standby, but that won't convince all millennials. Quote, There are food trends. Quinoa. And kale are hot. Canned tuna has never been hot. Timothy Matthew, a 26-year-old Chicagoan, was quoted as saying, what if Kylie Jenner Instagrammed about it?
I have a question. So, Wayne, do you own a can opener?
I do.
Wayne does. Aiden?
Aiden?
Aiden does as well. Two for two.
Two for two. We've done our own study.
That is a hard data point
right
there.
The tuna we get doesn't need a can opener anyway. You pull the thing back and it pulls off.
They have tabs on them now. The tuna, every can of tuna we have has the tab.
Yeah.
So we don't need the can opener either.
And packaging evolves. Like, they're having two arguments. Like, I understand sales of tuna going down. Like, I get tuna not being trendy, but that's because tuna's not trendy. It's not because they don't own can openers. It's such an extrapolation. It's weird.
It's just, it's clickbait. It's just blame because they know people will get upset by the headline because, you know, it says in the article, it's been winning for 30 years.
Does anyone ever use...
So Aiden, 9 years before you were born, it's your fault sales started declining.
When you were a kid, did your mom have the apple juice in the can and then you used the side of the can opener?
The pointy side of the can opener.
Yeah, and you go like that. Yeah, they don't have that. And you had to do both sides, which... Science? I don't know.
Because the air had to go fluid. Yeah, exactly.
Physics, I don't know if they have that anymore.
I didn't take grade 12. What? Physics? Chemistry? Geometry?
I don't know what you're talking about.
What would cover off opening the second hole in that can of apple juice? What science?
Did the guy complain about tuna smelling fishy?
Yeah. It's funny, right?
Yeah, it's really funny.
And here's the thing. You're blaming something. And here's the thing. 30 years ago, when the trend started going downwards, you know whose fault it was?
Our fault, probably.
Gen X, yeah.
Did we have can openers?
Yes. That's how I survived. That was it. And these tabs came out. So instead of talking about how... Because it's the thing is, they're not even talking about the... they're blaming a utensil or a piece of utility that you've got in your drawer for not innovating. By the way, can I reiterate that this quote was from Starkist's VP of Marketing and Innovation?
They only have one. They have a VP for marketing and innovation. Yeah. That seems wrong.
Both. Who blames a can opener lack of purchasing. When's the last time you used one?
I use a can opener all the time, but that's because I like the tomato sauce that's in the can.
Right, in the can, right. And then there's like a couple, but they're not blaming.
It's mostly tomato sauce, or like when I make chili, the beans come in cans, and then I use it then too.
Bring back the apple juice in cans, people. Bring it back.
I'll buy some today.
Yeah. Do you want to go the other millennials thing as well? And then we'll do that.
Sure.
Okay. So as a contrast from theatlantic.com, millennials didn't kill the economy. The economy killed millennials.
Aww.
Bum, bum, bum.
Everyone's so dramatic.
The American system has thrown them into debt, depressed their wages, and kept them from buying homes, and then blamed them for everything. When a state American institution is declared dead, the news media will like to haul the same usual suspect before the court of public opinion, which is the millennial generation. But according to a new report by economists at the Federal Reserve, this genre of news analysis is pure fiction. That's what we've been saying. When researchers compared the spending habits of millennials and those of young people from past years, such as boomers and Xers, they concluded that millennials do not appear to have preferences for consumption that differ significantly from those of earlier generations. They also found that millennials are less well off than members of earlier generations when they were young, with lower earnings, fewer assets, and less wealth. Millennials aren't doing in the economy. It's the economy that's doing in them. So this is the same thing. It's here. I'll give you some examples. He says, for years, various outlets, including Washington Post and Pew Research Center, continued reporting that young people were buying fewer cars and houses than those in previous generations at a similar point in their life. In 2016, about 34% of Americans under 35 owned a house. When boomers and Gen Xers were under 35, about half of them did. But the fact that young people are buying fewer houses and cars does not prove that they want fewer houses and cars. It might mean they simply can't afford them. That latter conclusion is now supported by research from the Federal Reserve. Fed economists found that the depressed rate of home ownership among millennials was entirely about income and affordability. Young boomers and young Xers made significantly more money at a similar point in their life cycle than they said, and controlling for income and employment wiped out all generational differences. The typical sale price of an existing single-family home in 2017 was 4.2 times greater than the median household income. That's 30% higher than it was in 1988. It's even worse in some other cities. So what they're saying is nothing to do with millennials. It has everything to do with the economy, the cost of living, and the price. Not to mention, it goes on here, and this was from the author of a great book called Hitmakers, which is a fantastic book as well, about the music business. But the point of all of this is when it comes to car ownership, home ownership. This isn't even about Uber. This isn't even about ride sharing. This is about economics. This is about, they're living in a home. They can't afford a house. Their salaries have not raised with inflation the same as it was with us and with boomers.
But they're saying the spending patterns are similar.
Spending patterns are similar. The desire to own is similar. But the economics of it, the cost of living is entirely skewed now. It's gone up much more than the actual inflation has gone up. It's also looking at, what else was it? It was housing, it's cars, and then living at and cost of tuition. Coming out of school, especially in the United States now, the amount of debt you've got.
Crazy.
Is insane compared to, and that goes against your credit report. That goes against your ability to spend. That goes against disposable income. And so you come at this where it costs you anywhere from 2 to 5 times more to go to school, depending on where you're going and in-state and out-of-state. The cost of housing has gone up 30%, but your wages has raised 11% since the 80s. The equation just, there you go. This is what kills me about generational assumptions, that somehow there's a cutoff line around 35 years old right now, 36 years old, that you suddenly all went, nah, I don't want a house. Nah, I don't want a car. You know that I'm going to assume this. I don't have any data backing it up. I don't think most people who live at home necessarily want to live at home when they're fully grown.
Yeah.
This isn't an optimal choice for these people. People want, I think, and this is again the personal opinion, I think people want to feel the independence and they want their own place. I think they want their own home. I think they want their own car. It's a circumstance. And then you read an article saying millennials and boomers are now moving in together to save money. And I'm like, you invented roommates. Like, you've come up with this new thing called roommates. Like, this is just how economics works. And yet we're saying they're different. It's killing me.
It's not the can opener's fault.
The can opener is the canary in the coal mine.
Exactly.
It should have told us something that you're killing me.
Would you like to do one more story? Or are you feeling like that wraps it up?
Well,
because I have one more story.
Yeah, let's go.
All right. Burger King's new trolling ploy sends fans to McDonald's to unlock a 1 cent Whopper deal.
This is fantastic.
That's a fantastic title. Any lucid American knows the place to get a Whopper is Burger King.
Yep.
But as of Tuesday morning, the fast food chain is back to gleefully trolling McDonald's with a new Whopper detour campaign that sends customers to its arch rivals locations to collect a steep discount on BK's own iconic burgers. From December 4th to the 12th, the Burger King smartphone app will let anyone within 600 feet of one of the 14,000 McDonald's restaurants around the country order a Whopper for a single cent, as opposed to $4 or $5 it might run full price, so long as they're willing to trek to the nearest participating Burger King afterwards to pick up the actual sandwich. A new video promotes the stunt created by a new agency partner, FCB New York, with footage of customers baffling the drive-thru clerks at McDonald's, rolling up like boneheads and insistently ordering Whoppers. The clip should be taken with a tiny disposable paper packet of salt, but it's an amusing, if equally absurd, way to get a devious point across, roping in its competitors' employees to help. Isn't that great?
I love it. It's a phenomenal... The using geolocation to say you're near McDonald's, how about a Whopper?
It says in Argentina, it says more recently Burger King in Argentina even declined to sell Whoppers and sent fans directly to McDonald's to actually buy Big Macs as an act of goodwill. But that was only for one day, McHappy Day, and then all the Big Mac sales would benefit cancer charity. So they like sent everyone out of the restaurant. They had to go to McDonald's. It's pretty fun.
It's a cool move.
It is a cool move.
Beats sound. I know.
What?
The YouTube channel.
Yes.
Opening things.
With can openers.
Can openers. Boom.
It's going to be a big hit.
Done. We got the 50 plus demographic.
Will Emma sponsor it?
I don't know. Will they still sponsor this?
I honestly have no idea.
Oh, okay. We're on thin ice, people. Thanks for listening.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and visit theunpodcast.com. And remember, friends don't let friends use QR codes.